Welcome to the Future of Work series presented by Algonquin College's Corporate Learning Center. I'm your host, Doug Weatherspoon, the Chief Learning Officer of an amazing team of creative professionals that are dedicated to helping individuals and organizations thrive. In this series, we're sharing some fantastic insights to help you optimize both yourself and your organization for the future of work. So if you're 50 years or older, the internet at work was really but a dream when you started your career. By contrast, if you're 23 or younger today, you've never known a world without a smartphone. Much like the internet has opened up new fields of work, artificial intelligence and machine learning are expected to do the same, creating both challenges and opportunities for government, companies, and individuals. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Sean Hinton, founder and CEO of SkyHive. Based in Vancouver, SkyHive has created artificial intelligence technology that supports rapid workforce reskilling efforts. Sean, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Talking about AI and its impact, there seem to be two camps, those that see AI for all its possibilities and those that see it for all its challenges. Where do you stand on the impact of AI in the workplace?
I tend to stand on the side of humanity is going to decide what it wants to do with this advanced technology. And we've seen this throughout innovation, where there's a choice to be made. We can use advanced technologies for good, or we can use advanced technologies for things perhaps not so good. And I ultimately believe that humanity will choose to harness the power of machine learning and artificial intelligence for the good of humanity, as history has dictated, and we've had a relatively good track record at doing that with technologies before this.
Yeah, the reality is that technology or innovation has happened throughout the world's history. And to date, anyway, we've always benefited from those advances. So why do we anticipate something different happening in this case? I noticed you recently put out a blueprint, kind of a two-page article on four steps to building back better. This is the first podcast we're having since everyone across the world went into lockdown and social distancing became a word that everybody knew. I'm just wondering where you think the opportunities are for organizations in this time when, you know, the clouds seem pretty dark for many.
Moving into COVID, I think that reskilling was top of mind. I mean, we saw in previous conference board C-suite surveys, they do annual surveys, where reskilling was in the top three issues facing C-suite leaders all over the world. And the impact of COVID has, at least in terms of our experience, only accelerated and exacerbated those requirements. And what we were looking at before COVID was this longer drip proliferation of digital transformation. So new automated technologies, increased but longer term sort of slow drip globalization, a lot of centralization in terms of growth in markets through acquisition. And so bigger companies getting bigger and less small companies available. And I think what's happened with COVID is all of those issues remain extremely relevant, but a lot of them have been accelerated. And we're seeing this in terms of the real-time labor market information that we track. And so SkyHive works with governments and large corporations as part of the work it does to monitor real-time skills level changes happening in the labor market. And what we're seeing is we're seeing a shift drastically from traditional roles. So if you take a customer service representative in a retail environment, for example, we're seeing a very fast demand from employers for digital skills that need to be overlaid onto that role. And so this is not something that was new prior to COVID. It's just something that has drastically accelerated.
Almost every company has been impacted in dramatic ways, and many of them have had to reinvent their operating model. You have organizations that were not online before, or maybe online in a in a limited way from a restaurant to a dry cleaners. And all of a sudden they're having to really reinvent the way in which they do business. And that requires obviously a new set of skills, a new set of experiences and knowledge that really wasn't there. And yet companies are struggling to kind of find the talent that they need and upskill it. So how does your technology really change that reality for organizations?
Yeah, so what SkyHive does is it uses various types of artificial intelligence to extract skills from workers and extract skills from jobs. And then it uses AI to find correlations in matching of skills to jobs and to people. And so to put it into a pragmatic real life example, if we took a coal mining community, for the last number of years, coal mining has been a sector that's suffered greatly in terms of advancements occurring with respect to environmental technologies and renewable energies. And so what we do know is if we take members of the coal mining community, they have a collection of skills that they've collected from their work experience, their life experience, and their educational experience. And what SkyHive does is it extracts those skills in real time, and it allows people to see their skill set and then to see how their skill set matches across all jobs in the labor market. So if I'm a coal miner and I'm in a community that has limited opportunities outside of coal mining, I'm able to then see the gaps that I have to future jobs that I may want to be pursuing. And then I have the ability to match the training that I need at a skills level to reskill. And I'll stop here and define reskilling. So reskilling is skills to pursue other careers. In other words, it's not upward mobility, it's horizontal mobility into other career pathways. Upskilling is really about upward mobility, where you want to be a supervisor in a place and you have an aspiration to be a manager. So you are upskilling to take on that additional role. And so people then have the democratization of their skill set, their ability to see how that skill set fits across all jobs, and then the ability to match training to fill in the gaps so they're not wasting time on training that isn't relevant to their desired career pathways. For a company, we typically have only ever seen our workforce through the lens of job titles. And so if we have something like project manager, this is a job title that's been the same for decades. But what's actually happening within that job, the technical skills, the soft skills, the tools, the technologies, the methodologies that are used to do that job are constantly changing. And so SkyHive extracts from the higher level into the more granular level to allow us to see matches and correlations to things that would be considered perhaps unconventional or something that wasn't known before.
I just love the idea that this is being done in real time as well. So do you want to talk a little bit about that aspect? Because the traditional way that we've done this is usually by looking at employment data that might be a year old or at best a month old. And what you're talking about is real time, kind of as it's happening, information. You want to go into a little bit of detail on that front?
Yeah. So in a traditional context, or what I call the classical context of labor market analysis, researchers look at new jobs that are being posted. So they collect all of these new jobs that are being posted. They collect what we call supply side information. So the people who are looking for jobs. And this is through the form of people that are creating LinkedIn profiles or job board profiles or posting their resume online, etc. And then they look at training information to see what types of new training is being done. Well, this is done, you can imagine the amount, there's millions of movements in these supply and demand factors in a typical labor market. There are thousands of jobs being posted, lots of hiring being done, lots of training being created, people leaving companies. And so if you're manually trying to do this, it's very difficult to capture real-time information because there has to come a point where you have to stop, collect that information, and then interpret it. So what SkyHive has done is it has automated that process. And so we've used artificial intelligence to constantly be scanning and collecting all of this information and activity and interpreting that in real time. And so we're able to see, for example, we did an analysis over the weekend for a state in the United States where we were able to split up New Jersey into 31 counties and see month over month the exact skills trends and job demand trends and supply trends that were happening during that period of time. This type of visibility into a labor market with, as you say, the real-time ability to view it has never been possible before. And so we were able to innovate and push innovation in this space.
Yeah, just compelling. Just to use Algonquin as an example, we've got lots of employees who, you know, let's say you were working as a plumber in the organization and we're now kind of locked out of our facility. So right now you're underemployed. And so what we're doing at the organization is spending a lot of time going through our data to see what skills people have, how could we redeploy people in the organization? Because, for example, on our corporate training side, we've seen a massive growth in business over the last 2 months. And so we need lots of moderators in our online courses, as example. And what you're talking about is an organization being able to do that literally in minutes, and in fact, being able to predict the future demand of employees and of positions.
Yes, it's an interesting examination as it relates to predicting, because typically how economists, labor economists, had predicted the future state is that they would run what's called regression analysis. So they would take a current state of what's happening in the labor market. They would look at data backwards. So what was history telling us? And then they would mathematically trend forward what that regression was in terms of the current state and the past state in order to predict the future. So what we did was we built an artificial intelligence that actually goes out and scans all forward-thinking material, so patent applications, academic journals, subject matter expertise, and it extracts all the skills from that material. And so it's able to set what we call the lighthouse, right? The future state. But we know with the lighthouse that even if we're traveling in that exact direction today, we know there's going to be variables that are going to change the course. We're going to get some bad weather. We're going to get a different tide. Some things will happen in the labor market. So lo and behold, COVID is a perfect example of this, where if you went on to existing labor market websites today on the Government of Canada or the provincial websites, you will look at the current state as they stated in their labor market reports. And it's very clear that this information, A, doesn't capture COVID. And a lot of it is based on census information, which only happens once every, 5 years?
5 years.
Yeah. So what we're able to see is literally what's happening this week versus last week, or today versus yesterday, et cetera. And so because of that, when we're using future prediction, we know it's going to change, but because we operate in real time, those adjustments are made as we go. And so if we said the path to this lighthouse is a certain direction, and that direction changes because a new technology comes out or a new acquisition is made and it drastically alters the labor market or COVID happens, then we're able to adjust that in real time. And so you don't lose a lot of inefficiency in terms of the reskilling efforts of companies and people.
Yeah. So let's keep going, because that idea of rapid targeted reskilling. So it's great to have, you know, understand the impact to the workforce and start to predict the future demands. But I think what's really compelling is the way in which you're thinking about reskilling. And, you know, the traditional university or college environment is very course-based. It's very time in seat. It's very much you get set into a program and you have to kind of follow it in a linear fashion. And what you guys have done is come up with some technology that in minutes, if I'm not mistaken, can assess the skill sets of an individual, match that against those future demand shifts, future needs or existing needs, and serve up to that individual a set of options for filling those skill gaps that really are very much focused at kind of the particular skill that they need. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's just so compelling in today's reality.
Absolutely. And I think in this topic, I'm going to touch on something that's of particular interest to me. So when we talk about the type of education a learner receives, I'm often considerate of the fact that we have a K-12 system, then we have post-secondary, then we have adult learners, And that sort of, you know, there's a plethora of considerations that need to be made for how we provide content to a learner to ensure that they're taking away those key learning objectives and developing those skills. But we also have an added layer of complexity now, which is a plethora of digital content, different websites that are offering different types of learning content. And so you begin to mix this with a very different demographic, as you had stated in your opening remarks of this podcast, where you talked about 23 and under, where access to information is extremely different. And the one consideration that I have for being in technology and really trying to push forward in this space is that we are not yet at the point using technology where we can identify the type of learning somebody needs to do. And what I mean by that is, are you a visual learner? Do you need to be in a team environment? Do you need to be hands-on? Is there lab work? You know, is a VR lab going to be the same as a physical lab? Do you need feel and touch with your learning? These are the types of things that technology at this point is just not advanced enough to deal with. And so there's not a moment where I discount any of this type of training. If in-classroom training is the learner preference and will generate the highest quality learning outcomes, then that's exactly where that learner should be. If there's a learner who's a, you know, an adult learner that's a mid-career professional that's looking to gain just one or two specific skills and can achieve that in different formats, then so be it. And the challenge for me as I build and grow SkyHive is not to be someone who's a technology that's going to say which content is better than others. So what we do with SkyHive is we serve as a facilitator. So we aggregate all learning content in all the methods that I just explained. And we boil all of that down to skills. And then we offer that completely non-discriminatory. So there's content that's from all of these different providers. But we offer the learner the opportunity to select what type of training they want to get to fill that skills gap. And for us, we basically, as I said, serve as a facilitator. Now, through social proof, when somebody takes a course and they say, I have a 3 out of 5 satisfaction with that course, our AI is learning and being able to provide qualitative information back to those course content providers to say, this is what our learners are saying. And I don't even say our learners. I mean, the learners we have facilitated to learn through other content providers. But I think it's a big challenge for us to determine, how do we harness digital technology to actually understand the type of learner? Because I get very concerned as a technology entrepreneur and somebody who has a passion for reskilling, I get very concerned about the quality of learning that's going to happen in the future, especially as people become more self-managed with their learning. So I think it's a big opportunity for anyone who's listening who has a passion to innovate in this space. Please do contact me and I can share with you more thoughts and hopefully inspire you to get started on innovating in that space.
And we'll put those details in the notes. I love, you know, your openness to the reality that everybody is different. Everybody has a different set of experiences. Everybody learns in a slightly different way. And our task here is to really learn as we go through this reskilling adventure. Keep learning, keep understanding what works and what doesn't work, and be open to any and all possibilities. So I love that philosophy. And maybe to kind of come around full circle, one of the things that I admire about SkyHive is its commitment to the deep understanding of poverty. And do you want to kind of go into that and your B Corporation commitment and just talk a little bit about that initial drive?
Sure. So before launching SkyHive, I was a successful private sector CEO. So I ran a company that was a global company, 500 employees with 23 global offices. And I had a certain experience that led me to really want to do something that could deeply impact the world. And so when I started to conceive SkyHive, what I was conceptualizing at that point was being able to create a company that could be hugely successful from a profit perspective, but drive impact in tandem. And this is a very difficult thing to achieve. And let me explain this a little bit. A lot of companies have corporate social responsibility initiatives. So they have, you know, investments that they make, they have giving pledges, and that is sort of an offshoot of what their core business is. And then you have not-for-profits that are typically funding constrained, and as a result of that, have very narrow and defined pathways in terms of what they can be doing with respect to impact. To grow a for-profit company that can truly be impactful was frankly a bigger challenge designing than the technology itself that I designed. And so what we mean by that is a true enterprise that throughout its life will be considered a good company at its core. And so I'm always very proud that after 4 years, and when I've met you today and you said, you know, you recognize my company to be that. And that's exactly what I mean when I say a company that drives impact at its core. And so there's a couple of things that we do in order to ensure that our vision and mission remain focused on that overall goal, which is empowerment and economic livelihood for people through reskilling. And so the first part is to have a community internally that is aligned to the vision and mission of that. And so nobody we hire at SkyHive will ever be misaligned to that vision and mission. And we have a certain set of core values that we follow and certain commitments that we have to one another that hold us tight to those standards. In addition to that, we became a B Corporation. So a B Corporation is a for-profit social impact organization. And what that means is that the company has made a commitment at its board level and through its articles of incorporation to not only serve the value of shareholders, but also serve the value of society at large. So effectively, it provides the company with the legal requirement to fulfill the value of both of those interests. The next part is to engage in the community. So we're a global company, but our community is in Vancouver where we're located. And so our team spends a lot of time engaged with local community initiatives, and we have volunteer and mandatory volunteer days and community engagement days where our entire team is focused on community engagement. And then there's the overall bigger picture, which is the global impact that we want to make. And that's obviously satisfied through our technology and the vision and mission that we have. So then in addition to that, we became Western Canada's only living wage employer as an AI company. So a certified living wage employer. And I fully encourage more companies to do that. That's very important. And lastly, we became inaugural signatories to a public declaration on the ethical and transparent use of artificial intelligence. And so we will never be in a position where there will be any questions around personal information or data security or how our algorithms are working. We're extremely transparent and upfront about that. So those are some of the activities that allow us to remain true to that original vision and mission. And it's certainly my greatest privilege when the company is recognized as such.
Well, it shines through, sir. Shifting gears here as we kind of wind down the podcast. And I always ask our guests, because I think everybody has been influenced in some great way by others, about a piece of advice that you've received from a mentor or from a family friend that really shifted the direction of either the company or even you personally.
Absolutely. And this one was actually quite fundamental to me. So when I was considering becoming an entrepreneur, this was at a time where, you know, I have a young family, I have a mortgage, I have a very successful corporate career that was only trending upwards. Everything was extremely healthy. And I was struck with this passion. And you immediately, when you're considering becoming an entrepreneur, especially sort of mid-career with, you know, with a relatively comfortable trajectory, we often get hit with this barrier of security. And we say, okay, well, can we actually do this in terms of the security that we need to maintain our lifestyle? And you get a lot of fear around that. And so there's always this discussion around regret. As an entrepreneur or somebody who wants to become an entrepreneur approaches the ledge, they look over the ledge and they say, nope, just too risky. And they start to walk back. And I had a mentor that talked to me during that time. And this person said to me, they said, Sean, picture yourself on your deathbed. What would the risk have been? Would it have been that you put some of your financial security at risk? Or would the risk have been that you spent the rest of your life ignoring what your purpose actually was in terms of your career and what you wanted to bring to the world. And that immediately shifted my perspective. If I didn't pursue this purpose, if I didn't jump off that ledge, that would have been the risk to me. It wouldn't have been the financial security that I risked as a result of contemplating jumping off that ledge. And so for any aspiring entrepreneur, regardless of where they are in their career, even if they're retired, and that fear starts to creep in, just think about what the actual definition of risk is going to be long-term in life, as opposed to what you're faced with in that situation.
Wow. What a great way to end our time together. Sean, thanks so much. I'm inspired by the work that you're doing and just grateful that Algonquin can be a part of it, and just really looking forward to our continued collaboration in the months and years to come. So thanks for sharing your thoughts and really appreciate the time you've given us today.
Great. Thanks for having me. Appreciate the time.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Future of Work series. Let's keep the conversation going. So follow us on social media and learn about our events at futureofworkseries.ca. I'm Doug Weatherspoon. Thanks for joining us.